It is finally time. The day is now. The future is here. In 2019, Xbox showed us the future.
Oh.
And the future was Hellblade 2. And by God, has the future arrived and smacked us all in the face? What do I mean about this? I will tell you in a second. But so before I do, welcome back to the Die We Nerd Podcast, where some nerds just talk about a lot of things. And today, I'm going to talk about a lot of things. But Joel, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? How are you today? Cooking? You cooking at home? I'm cooking a little.
You know, Joel, I am cooking. Cooking up my first impression of Hellblade 2, because I've been playing it for the past 2.5 hours. I literally jumped off so I could come do this podcast. And Joel, I have a lot of opinions. I have a lot of takes. Of course, for everybody watching, listening, either live here on twitch.tv/UnitedWeNerd or on our YouTube channel or in podcast services, do not worry. I'm not going to spoil anything. It just came out today. I'm not going to spoil it. So, because I want everybody that has an Xbox, go play the game. Because Joel, holy shit. I've talked your ear off about how much I love Hellblade 1.
He has.
And I'm not going to lie. The whole reason why I got my Series X day one is because back in 2019 at the Game Awards, we watched it together.
You did.
Xbox showed us the future of their new console, and the first game that they said that was going to bring them in to the next generation of consoles was Hellblade 2. Their announcement for Hellblade 2, and by God, does this game deliver on that promise? In my opinion, this is probably the best looking game I've ever seen. Ninja Theory has cracked the code and delivered us what I believe is our first legitimate Unreal 5 experience. Now, what do I mean by that? The game in and of itself is pretty similar to how the first Hellblade game played. The combat is very simple. However, they did change it so it feels more dynamic and like dramatic in a sense, I would say. It's not difficult, but it definitely adds to the presentation that they're trying to deliver. You know, the puzzle mechanics were there where, you know, Senua like sees like a glyph and you kind of have to like maneuver the world and like distort it in a way to continue forward on your quest. The visuals, Joel, have you seen a few years ago when they released that tech demo, that Matrix, like Unreal 5 tech demo?
Yes, I believe so. And some of the footage leading up to this looks, I can't put it into words when it's like one of the best things I've ever seen on TV, you know?
So keep that in mind as I kind of try to explain this. So like I said, I'm not going to spoil anything, so don't worry about it. I'm not going to spoil the game, but one of the first major fights that you do early on in the game. So one of the biggest complaints that some people had in the first game was that it felt like it was very comic booky, like Batman-y, where you would have a group of enemies that are around you, but they all kind of take turns trying to attack you. So like you fight one person, everybody else is like waiting to
an RPG attack.
No, just kind of like you are the protagonist, so instead of doing the logical thing and everybody attacking at once, like, only one person is going to attack. And then, like, once you beat the fuck out of somebody else will, like, rush in, and then you beat the fuck out of them, kind of situation. So this time, they took advantage of their new graphics engine with Unreal 5 and, like, using that as a way to kind of disorient, but also kind of, once you start getting into combat, it starts to kind of warp the world around you to the point where you're only solely focused on one person, so everything else around you doesn't matter. And I guess to some people that might sound a little, you know, lame, because it's still like the one-on-one fighting, but I believe, like, my experience that I've played so far, again, it's only 2.5 hours in, it really does have that extra oomph to, like, the whole presentation. So back to what I was saying about one of the first major fights, the attention to detail is so extra that there are points where the character that I'm fighting against looks real. Like, yeah, it looks like I'll attack them and they'll, like, post back, and then it just turns into a person. Like, so one of the neat things about Hellblade 1 was that their use of FMV, where you would have, you know, the character model of, like, Senua kind of, like, there, but then, like, appearing off to the side or kind of, like, next to her, it's this FMV of, like, a real person talking to her. This game doesn't have that, but I think that they didn't do it this time is because Unreal 5 just has so much power to it that there are moments in time where the characters look like people, and, like, it switches into, like, a movie. It's so, it's like, it fucking blows my mind.
So the cinematic transition and the gameplay is just flawless.
So remember the first trailer where it started out with, like, just, like, the landscaping and, like, a camera just kind of panning down on, like, this just vast, just kind of, like, not wasteland, but, like, you know, different terrains and, like, rocky hills and whatnot. Yeah, and, like, yeah, remember how, like, the fidelity of that was just so extra and, like, so, like, realistic. Yeah, that's how it looks. That's how it looks. And it's mind-boggling to me because usually there's a little bit of a depreciation, you know, maybe like a cutscene it looks that good. But then once you actually get into, like, the in-game engine, like, it kind of, you know, it still looks good, but then it has that little bit of, like, oh, okay, I can tell it's, you know, someone put it there.
Right.
It holds up. It's to the point where it kind of freaks me out a bit, because it's like, this is the first time I can, like, legitimately say, like, this game is holding the promise of what they talked about before, like, the Series X and the PS5 came out. It's like, this is going to be the future. Like, we are going to be using all of this stuff that the Unreal 5 engine had to offer as far as just, like, lighting rigs and having that very fine details of, like, a person's, like, face where you can see the pores of their skin and, like, you can, their eyes look human and real and shit like that. Speaking of the lighting, holy shit. Right before I hopped onto here, there was a scene that had kind of, like, bursts of light coming out, and I'm paying attention just through the reflection of light, and it looks like if you were to go outside at night and someone just, like, flashes, like, a, you know, a fireball or something, and, like, you see the light kind of, like, shine bright onto, like, a surface, and then they dissipate. It's like, holy fuck, this game is amazing.
Someone's having a grand old time,
dude. I am
enthralled.
If it wasn't for the fact that I have work tomorrow, I would go back to playing once we're done here. Like, I am running the risk of having this podcast come out late on like YouTube and audio just because I want to keep playing this game so much. It's honestly could have probably be my game of the year unless if something else just blows my mind at the amount that this game has.
Bye-bye, Helldivers. Bye-bye.
I mean, Helldivers is a great game, but it's just like, this is the game that I invested into the current Xbox generation, right? And especially with all the negative news that Xbox has been getting recently with all the layoffs and the mixed messaging and stuff like that. It's...
Oh, yeah, we're going to get into that.
It's kind of, you know, nice to see a win. And I kind of say it hesitantly because, you know, there's still some people that look at this game and, you know, the reviews have been coming out throughout the day. And, you know, we're seeing a mixtures of like, you know, eights, nines. Some people are giving sevens, maybe six, sixes. And then like the occasional 10 from certain outlets. So this game has about the same kind of scale of like varied reviews than the last one did. Now some people can look at it and be like, well, this game didn't hit, you know, all the marks that it needed to. Or someone like me, I can look at this game and this is game of the year. Like the achievements in the audio, oh my god, I didn't even talk about the audio. Like the groundbreaking shit they did for the last game, they bumped it up 3 times as insane with the 3D audio, where like you have the voices in Senua's heads like talking to you, and like it, you can hear them kind of moving around your head, and it's just, it grosses you into this whole sensation that they're trying to deliver to you. But I think it's great that a game like this could be varied in a sense, but then also showing that, hey, this is what the Series X can do. Xbox hasn't had a game that fully became the example of what all of the fancy, you know, 10 gigaflop, whatever the fuck, you know, metrics that they give to show you how good this console is. You know, they haven't had that game that kind of hit the benchmarks of what you would consider to be like the next gen or now the current gen of consoles.
Yeah.
Hellblade 2, I think, is the beginning of that.
You think it's going to save Xbox right here? Do you think this is what they needed?
I hope so. I hope that it gets the attention that it deserves. The biggest criticism that a lot of people are having, and justly so, is that the advertisement just hasn't been there. But with interviews from Don Metric of Ninja Theory, it's been like, we want this game to speak for itself. And that's what they did with the last one, and Hellblade became a critical success. Like, to the point where it got on the Xbox's radar and they bought Ninja Theory. You know, Hellblade 1 was technically a PlayStation exclusive. Not that PlayStation owned them, but it's just like it came out on PlayStation first and then Xbox nabbed it. I don't know. The news today just came out that Microsoft and Xbox greenlit another project for Ninja Theory. So they have the horror game that they're making, and now they just got greenlit to do another game. So it seems like the people at Xbox and maybe Microsoft, you know, believe in Ninja Theory and what they're doing. And I hope so, because what they're doing is so unique in my eyes and so special that it needs to be, they need to be able to set the course, you know, and hopefully, because what I believe their next biggest release is going to be Indiana Jones in the fall. So I think,
yeah,
I think Indiana Jones is going to be the real pace setter. Like Ninja Theory and Hellblade 2 was able to show them, hey, this is what the Xbox can be if we are allowed to do what we want to do. And so I think Indiana Jones needs to be that game where it's like, hey, I know you guys waited way too long for Xbox to start picking up the pace, but hey, we are here now. It's like all of that waiting around, all of the drama, all of the tension, you know, was worth it because we needed to get to this point. So,
damn,
long-winded monologue aside, go play Hellblade 2. If you have Game Pass, get on Game Pass. If you can buy it, even better, because it shows that people are interested in good games that are allowed to, you know, express their individuality. So do it. Okay.
That was a lot, but a great insight into a great game, perhaps.
Oh, it's a fantastic game. I'm biased, but I'm still going to say it's fantastic. Now I know I talked a lot up there. I do have a few more things to pick up on as far as like my week. I guess keep it on the game track. I finally picked up Tales of K'Zerezhel.
Oh, nice.
For people that don't know, it's the first game made from the studio that was the voice actor for Bayek of Siwa.
Yes. I follow him on Instagram. Oh, let me go.
Abu Bakar.
Yeah. He's in House of Dragon Season 2. He's coming up, man.
Oh, that's so cool.
Happy for him. He was in Raised by Wolves. If you want some trippy sci-fi shit, highly recommend. But yeah.
But yeah, it's the kind of Metroidvania-ish game that is kind of based off of his own experience about losing his father. So it's kind of the story of this, mm-hmm. of this young shaman that is having to deal with the idea that his father is no longer with us, and he's trying to kind of get him back in a way. And it's like, it's kind of you're going along this venture with Zhao as he's kind of dealing with the process of grief, and you know, he see him grow as a shaman. And
awesome,
it's a really interesting game. I've been playing it on my Switch, runs great.
Nice.
Sure, if you play it on anything else, it probably is a little bit sharper, but I think the Switch, you know, is just fine as far as running it. I'm not necessarily too big into like the Metroidvania games, but so far I've actually been surprised at how fun I've been having with it. You know, you have your mask powers.
I like Metroidvania stuff.
It's great, and it's only $20, which is wild.
Oh, that's cheap. What the fuck?
It's super cheap. It's
EA was gonna gouge us. No offense to the studio or anything, but
nah. But so you have your mask powers, and they kind of do different things. Like one is more ranged and defensive, or the other one is kind of more in your face and like melee oriented. And of course, you have your skill trees for like both masks. And you kind of get more like abilities and like different like little tweaks, and you unlock these like talismans that give you buffs and stuff. It's like kind of the, you know, the standard kind of Metroidvania kind of deal. And you kind of go through this big map going back and forth and unlocking new passageways and, you know, to progress through the story. but yeah, I've been having a great time with that. It sucks that for now, my time's going to be with Hellblade 2, but once I'm done with that, you know, I'll definitely be going back to Tales of Kinzer Zalo, it's a really fun time. And, you know, for a first outing for a brand new studio, you know, I think that it's a good attempt. I can see where people have been saying that it's a little bit too basic as far as like Metroidvanias go. But as far as, you know, just being the first time, it's like it's a fully voice acted game, you know, it looks, you know, really good. And also the story feels very personal, which, you know, of course it is. But you feel it there. And I think if you're into these type of games, you should try it out. You know, like I said, it's only $20. It's not too bad. I do think that it probably suffers from, unfortunately, coming out like a little bit after the newest Prince of Persia game, which was also a Metroidvania type that got rave reviews. So it kind of sucks because, of course, now people are going to be starting to, you know, compare it, which, you know, to each their own, you know, but.
Hey, I want to ask you, as someone who played a Castlevania game not too long ago, how's the music? Because Castlevania is a big fucking deal. I just want to know, in this game, how's the music?
The music's really good. I don't know, like, who they got to do the music or what composer they got, but they're doing a great job. The soundtrack is really good. The just like the background music feels super nice.
That's it. Next paycheck, I'm going in. I'm convinced.
But yeah, Tales of Kinzer Zalo, highly recommend checking it out. And the last big thing before I'll give it over to you. I saw finally Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes this past weekend. I won't go into too many details because, Joel, I know you haven't seen it yet. I don't know if you plan on seeing it. Or you want to see it? Okay.
Probably this weekend.
Highly recommend. I keep saying highly recommend. I enjoyed the previous ones, though. I say if you enjoyed the previous ones, you'll enjoy this one. It's more of that good ape shit. I will say.
Go ahead.
No, go for it.
I was going to say I saw. Spoilers, of course, are important to me, but I did see they tease, like as they did with the older ones, you know, the tie into. Say too much that I'll just say outer space. There are teases of what they did in the older movies with outer space. That's all I'm going to say. So I appreciate that they're still continuing that theme.
I don't want to say too much.
But that's what I saw on Twitter. I didn't go hard on clicking because I don't want it in my algorithm. So I was like, oh, okay. So if I'm wrong, cool. If I'm right, cool. So
I'll say this. It's refreshing that they're continuing the legacy of the most recent trilogy. But also they did, I think it was good that they kind of pulled it back in a little bit more, because the farther we went along with the last three movies, you know, it kept building up and building up to being this big,
this very big thing. Scale, yeah.
But now that we're kind of resetting, they drew it back into a more not smaller in terms of like, you know, impact, but just like the story focuses on the main character Noah and his clan. You know, it's not like the entire ape race. It's like this one clan of apes, and the trials and tribulations they, you know, that they have to go through to, you know, go, oh, what a wonderful day, you know, kind of thing. although I will say I expected that we were going to get a Dune Part 2 TikTok trend with What a Wonderful Day and Proximus. Yeah. Like I've seen so many TikToks of people doing that kind of stuff. But yeah, the acting is great. The team that they have that teaches the actors to be ape do a great job. Andy Serkis's crew nailing it once again, you know. I just really love what they do. It's kind of similar to how Anthony Daniels does the droid school for like Star Wars. Andy Serkis has become like the Anthony Daniels of apes. And all the characters are really good. It's really interesting because this isn't really a spoiler, but Kingdom takes place 300 years after war. So this is like a long period of time.
Oh, shit.
It's a big jump. And so it's like apes have become the dominant species, like outright. And it's just so interesting to see that whole take place, because now you have like every ape has been able to talk and stuff like that. And so you're getting to see how they interact with the world compared to the other ones, where it was kind of like, you know, gradually as the movies went along, a lot more apes started to be able to communicate and like talk. But then like now you're getting to the point where like apes are like humans in the fact that they can have like the deep thoughts and be able to like communicate with each other verbally, you know, and not broken English.
What happens when you cure Alzheimer's in apes, man?
I guess. I did want to tell you about my Wild Theater experience to kind of cap it off. So I went to the Sinopolis that's near us, right? Figured go to a fancy place, like enjoy the apes and the comforts of luxury. Cause they showed that they had, an IMAX version. I was like, oh, sick. All right. You know, I'll go see it in IMAX. Watch the apes do the ape shit, and that'd be fun. What I didn't realize is that they'd use the different version of IMAX than what you would imagine like a Century does, or like an IMAX theater does. So they have the big screen, right? Mm-hmm. It's like maybe not as big as like an IMAX screen that you would imagine, but when there is IMAX stuff happening, they project onto the side walls.
I've heard of so that, you, actually. Yeah.
So you have, like, the main screen and the side walls, like, stretch out. Like, all around you, you're, like, surrounded by the movie. I did not expect this, so it kind of, like, freaked me out for a second. Because it's, like, you just, boom, and you're just, like, in this, like, forest area. And you're, like, holy shit. And you can actually see where usually characters would get cut off by the border of the frame. You see them extend to the walls. And so like, you're seeing these characters still, you know, doing their shit. And it's like, oh fuck, this is sick, but also kind of weird. It doesn't do it throughout the whole movie, which I think is probably a good thing. Cause if it did that the whole time, I think I would like go into a sensory overload, but it was just such an interesting experience. Cause I've been regular IMAXs before, but I've never seen IMAX done like this. So I'm glad I could have experienced Planet of the Apes in such a unique fashion. But also, I don't know if I'll be seeing a movie like that anytime soon if I had the choice.
Getting all the cinematic viewing experiences.
I know. But yeah, really enjoyed it. Can't wait for it to come out on Blu-ray so I can add it to my collection. And besides that, you know, that's pretty much been it for me. So, Joel, I'll kick it to you. How's your week been?
I'll go backwards with this little list because I always have I don't remember. But I put out some new music. Haven't done that in a while. I just wanted to kind of test it. I was like, you know what? If I don't do this, I'm going to just keep on sitting up. So I just put it out. When they're listening to it. Yeah, my SoundCloud, Mad Mech Monster Mind SoundCloud. But yeah, I did that. I was like, I need to do it. Let's see what else. Yesterday, I took you through the first half of one of the Pantheon runs, right? Yes. That was fun. So you got to experience Pantheon. So basically, for those who don't know, in Destiny 2, they've introduced like a raid rush for a limited time. And if you succeed with the right score or in the time limit, you can get like free adept weapons. So we've been trying that with this group I've been running. So. What do you think of the little boss rush we did? We only did half. We did Golgoroth and Caretaker.
It's really interesting because if you're somebody that wants to have the raid experience but doesn't want to suck in the hours that one raid can usually give you, I think this is actually a good opportunity for people to not only get their like raid experience with like just like the encounters and the bosses, but also be able to have the opportunity to get those raid weapons that they kind of they've chosen to, you know, kind of skip out because, you know, you know me, Jules, like out of the group, I'm kind of the one that's not really into like, okay, let's, you know, spend the whole afternoon raiding and getting halfway through. So this was actually kind of fun. It's still a little stressful, you know, especially if you haven't raided in a while, you have to kind of remember what to do, but
you were holding your own. You're doing good.
Yeah. So, you know, it's pretty cool. I actually would look forward to seeing how all the other ones kind of play like that. Is this a limited time event?
Yes, it goes away, I believe, when I almost said Lightfall, when the final ship comes out. Just like Onslaught
goes damn, away. Dude. When... Why?
Yeah. Speaking of, they just dropped today in their update that for those chasing the Brave title, they just remove one of the triumphs. You don't even need all 10. Now it's just 9. So I'm done. Woo! Hey. I got Brave now. But yeah, I think it's pretty interesting. To get, yeah, again, the chance to get those weapons. And if you complete, like, there's going to be 3 or 4 weeks of this challenge. If you complete the first week, which we were trying yesterday, you could get one of the two exotics at the end. You can either get, I think, Touch of Malice or Eyes of Tomorrow. So you're guaranteed a raid exotic when you complete all 4 encounters after you talk to Shaq. So if you're missing out on that, for those who play Destiny 2, that's your chance, if you like raids at least. And we did LFG yesterday. Had a bunch of people like not be available or they're busy. That's fine, it happens. But this guy came in, he was chill. He said, I just did it for 7 hours, I'm riding that high still, let's go. I was like, okay, cool, dude. Wish we found him earlier, but yeah, he was cool. He's holding his own. He was a good guy.
And man, how far have we come where we can have LFG within the game itself?
Oh god, dude, it still blows my mind. I forgot. I was like, if the LFG, I was like, oh yeah, I could just do it in the game without the app or on Xbox.
So, don't have to go in the app. Don't have to go on Reddit. Wait to see if someone picks up the post. I've never done a Reddit
LFG, but I almost did. Man. But yeah, so Pantheon, I've been working on that. Oh yeah, I haven't returned to Outbreak since we did it. But yeah, we have our live stream if you missed it. We did Outbreak the first part, and I think we attempted Legendary, but we didn't beat it. But we got to still do that at some point. Apart from that, when I was doing homework last week, my wife found a new mission in Fallout 4. They re-release, even though it's an old game, when they upscaled it for next gen, there's a new mission. I was like, I think I know what this is, but she went in and did it, and I was like, whoa, this is cool. So basically, it's you go in to the shop, you're locked in, you have to kill everyone in there that's trying to hurt you, but when you beat it, basically, for the crafting part, you can get, like, Halloween decorations. So that was really cool. So in case you're playing Fallout 4 and didn't know that, you got some Halloween stuff for your bases. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. Right. So I was like, damn, either they were holding on to it and they just finally just wanted to release it for free. But yeah, that was cool.
Sweet.
Fun. On Sunday, I did Call of Cthulhu with one of my other D&D groups. We did that for a few hours. Basically, we're investigators in the 1920s now in Antarctica, based on the Mountains of Madness book by H.P. Lovecraft, I think. So there's like elder beasts and shit. I really like the character sheet they use. I think I might use that in the future, just the things you like spot hidden, automotive, shit like that. It's really cool. Psychology. But yeah, basically my character, his name is Jackson LeBlanc. He decided to touch a shiny crystal he shouldn't have, and then he became claustrophobic. So that was fun.
Wait, you gained claustrophobia for just touching a crystal?
I touched an elder crystal I shouldn't have.
Oh no.
And then earlier, because you could have psychotic breaks in this game, because you're like, wait, did I see that? Is that real? My character went catatonic the last time we played for like an hour. So we're I had to pilot the plane, and the plane didn't take off for like 2 hours. So I was like, what? So that's pretty fun. And there's like a modern version I might try with you guys that the person I usually sit next to recommended. So, but yeah, Mountains of Madness is pretty fun. Call of Cthulhu. Yeah, right. It's fun. I joked that we could just end the campaign right now because I was piloting the plane. Like I just crash into this obelisk, right? They're like, well, I guess we're done before summer. You know, it's like so it's a joke. But yeah, don't touch shiny crystals in RPGs. You shouldn't.
So comparing like the regular D&D like character sheet, like what are like the major differences between that and Call of Cthulhu?
There's, we still have Constitution, Dexterity, all that, but there's also like, how I kind of implemented luck a little bit here and there. Luck is a factor. If you want to affect your roll, you have like a luck pile to pull from. There's sanity, right? If you take sanity damage, you can go insane if you take enough. That's what caused my claustrophobia. I took a lot of sanity damage that day. If you take a certain amount, it causes a psychotic break. So there's stuff like that. And the combat is very like, you should not be engaging in combat. It's like it could be life or death depending on play. Like I've been lucky so far, but definitely we had an encounter where it's like, oh, this guy has a gun, and but we're all missing, right? But usually they can do anywhere from like 5 to 10 damage, and you only have like 20 HP. So it's like
Holy
pretty
shit.
high stakes, right? If you don't play right. So also I almost killed one of our people because I was piloting the plane and then I rolled bad. And that's the thing. A lot of the rolls we do 2d10s or a d100. So you have to usually roll either above, depending on what the DM wants, above or below the score. And I rolled bad. So like, one of the people on the plane in the game got impaled with a chair, and they took 6 damage. And for them, that's huge because they already were damaged from before. So they were like at 1 HP. So that was they were bleeding out too. So yeah, it's
God
fun.
damn.
I think I'll try that next. Do some spooky stuff. We haven't really touched that, I think, with horror. We've done a lot of sci-fi, which I'm about to get it. So, Call of Cthulhu has been pretty fun. Yeah, I take the reins on that next one, or I'll incorporate. I've been stealing a lot of pieces from a bunch of different things, like your Cypher, the other one that I use in StarCraft, and this. There's so many good things. I might just make a like conglomeration of those. But yeah, Friday we did 5e with Mass Effect. For those who know the
Yeah,
story,
we
we
did.
there I. Been sitting splitting into 3 acts, and we ended act one with the Genophage Tachanka arc. So basically they had to go make the Krogan sterile again, and a lot of trials and tribulations with that. So
Oops.
what'd you think, Brian? You lived it. I DM'd it. What'd you think?
No, I think it ran pretty well. I feel like, 'cause like what I said before, when you're talking about leading up to it. Like I've played the games, so I knew what was going to happen. So I was trying to play more of a back seat, just to see what everybody else was going to do. But yeah, it was great. We surprisingly tried to be stealthy at first, and it kind of worked up until it didn't. But yeah, it felt very action packed throughout the whole time. I felt like we had a good sense of the seriousness of the situation. So like I felt like everybody was kind of like on it, and like we did have some we did have some tricky situations, especially with one person that didn't realize how big a airstrike is.
Those who don't know, I gave one of our characters who's notorious for blowing up our own team. So I said, okay, I'll give you an airstrike 20 by 20. He thought I meant 20 by 20 feet. No, I meant 20 by 20 spaces.
Yeah.
So.
So luckily, he backed down from that, which is cool. But yeah, I had a really good time just seeing what the people that weren't in the know, how they had to kind of grasp with the situation of,
Yeah.
spoilers for anyone that hasn't played Mass Effect 3 yet. Whoops, it's
Be
kind
too
of been
late
a
though.
while. The whole situation with Morden. And just seeing how they like, it felt like for a second, like everybody just kind of had to like sit and like think about it. It's like, oh shit.
That's what I wanted too. That's what Mass Effect should be. You gotta sit with those choices.
So yeah, all in all, it was a real good end to the first chapter of Mass Effect 3.
Oh boy, they're gonna see some big baddies soon. I am so excited.
Oh God, I'm
Oh
so
man,
fucking
Brian was
afraid,
dreading
dude.
it.
I'm so fucking
Oh man.
afraid. Like, I thought I was gonna have a rough time with this one. I don't want to meet the banshees. I can only
For those who
imagine.
don't know, in the Mass Effect 3 game, there were, and even in Andromeda, there are some enemies that have a one-hit kill mechanic if you get too close or you're playing. Kind of, unknowingly. And one of the characters they fought that time was a brute that has a one hit kill, but not as I'd say drastic. It's what you kind of expect if you get too close to this guy, but Banshees, which, you know, everyone kind of dreaded in Mass Effect 3, they teleport, they can sneak up on you, and there's some bullshit too, you know, when I had a shitty connection, it's like they pull you across the room, all of a sudden I'm impaled because I'm behind on the connection. But yeah, it'll be fun. And the Phantoms too. I changed something, for those who don't know, in Mass Effect 3, there is not a big battle for when Morden goes and here's the sterilization.
Oh God!
I threw that in for you and Jameson, because I know you guys know what happens. Sarah knows what happens too. But I was like, let's make it fresh. So they had to fight some invisible enemies. We're trying to kill them at Morden. So, and they brought back an old character from the last sequence. So that was interesting.
Yeah, that was a curveball.
Yeah, I was like, I need to make it fresh for everybody. Here we go. Yeah, that's pretty much all I did. You know, new music, lots of gaming on different levels. Yeah, I am really excited for Akuma this week.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. I've been going back and forth on Street Fighter. I've been trying to get back into it. I know I have to worry about something else this Friday, which we'll remind you guys later, with Showdown between Brian, Marcelo, I, and Lisa. You know, I have not been practicing Smash, but I'm confident. And if that's my downfall, that's fine. So, but Street Fighter was my jam, so I gotta go back in. But yeah, that was pretty much it. Just planning this trip I have with the boys. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of preparing, like you just mentioned, Joel, this Friday, 7 p.m. here on twitch.tv, we're gonna have another championship stream. And it is not a challenge for me. Is a challenge. Oh God!
I know. I know. I'm bugging on your screen. You're bugging on my screen. Yeah, I'm not in the usual spot today, so it's like
he's
pixelated madness.
He's slipping through the interwebs, folks. He has to see his path to victory on Friday, because we're going to be having a Nintendo Party Gauntlet. For people that watched last time, Lisa made the challenge. It's going to be Joel defending his title against me, Lisa, and Marcelo live right here in this little office room here. And we're going to be playing some Nintendo Party games. I believe Lisa mentioned maybe Mario Party, Mario Kart, Smash Brothers. So come hang out with us this Friday. And maybe
you need three of them to take me down. Feel like Thanos over here.
Hey, all man,
for a drop of blood.
Hey, man, your streak is, you know, holding strong right now. Defended your title. But let's see if you can handle the triple threat.
Right. All roads point to where next. If I falter, you know where we're going, Brian.
We'll see. But yes, come hang out with us this Friday. It'll be a lot of fun. So speaking of something that, you know, may be or may not be fun to talk about.
Oh boy, here we go.
Joel, let's, do you want to get into the big conversation, or do you want to get some little stuff out of the way?
I feel like there's two big conversations. One's a little more fun. One is not. I mean, can be fun. One of the things I want to talk about. Oops, wrong channel. Okay, so let's just talk a little bit about. We talked about our homies at Xbox. Let's go back a little. So Xbox doing this weird shit again. One, they want to bring Hellblade 2 to PS5. They dropped that. Thanks, Game Informer, for informing us that. I'm just like, yay. Really want to do that? What do you think about that, Brian?
I mean, the more people that can play Hellblade, why not? You know, if they can work out, because I know, you know, PlayStation has this publishing deal with Arrowhead, but if they can somehow get it to, you know, Xbox players, the more the merrier, dude. Like, this game, through the kind of kerfuffle that we had because of PlayStation, like, something that wasn't Arrowhead's fault, this game is still really good game, like better than anyone expected it to be. So let the Xbox people play. We need more people.
Fire, maybe that'll cause some change. Oh. Heat under some people's. I don't know. Uh-oh. What do you think? Am I gone?
What I'm thinking is that we're having some technical difficulties at the moment. So I guess people on Twitch, hold on a second. I'm going to fix this real quick. People, audio and, you know, VOD realm, it'll be like it never happened. Hold on a sec. Joel, entertain the fine folks.
Oh, okay. All right. So for those listening, I just think it's strange that Xbox decided to do all these things right now. And I don't know, just they're shooting themselves in the foot more. Speaking of shooting themselves in the foot, I shared this with a homie. EA, you know, just got a film drop. I don't know why they did, but you're looking at ways to put ads into major games, kind of like you know, we do with mobile games. It'd be kind of funny. You're just playing, I don't know, let's say Hellblade, boom, ad for Hellblade 1 right there, or an ad for fucking Halo right in the middle of your game. I don't know if that's the right call ever. I understand like crossovers, that's pretty cool. I don't know though, but just an ad so blatant in a game, like, I get it. I mean, on, like, I just, some of these things we're sharing, I'm just like, I don't, man. It just ogles, like, what, how many PS5s are they gonna sell? And of course, with, you know, they made so many because they didn't have any, like, you know, you could blame scalpers or whatever. But hey, Brian, you here?
I think we're good.
His arms are up. I think we're good. All right, so coming back to what I was just talking about before. Hey, Brian, did you see that thing where it said EA wants to put ads into major games?
I heard about that. I don't know how well it's going to go.
I hope that gets shot down pretty fast.
Because, like, I've seen, like, other stories about other companies trying to, like, I knew that at one point Ubisoft was talking about trying to do that, and one of, I think it was Mirage, Assassin's Creed Mirage, the review copies that some people got, like, there's just, like, this big, like, advertisement screen that, like, covered the entire screen, and you actually had to click out of it to, you know, take it away.
Ooh.
Now, I think after, like, that was brought up, that kind of got, you know, brushed away. So I don't think Ubisoft's trying to do it right now. I don't know. EA is probably the company that would go through with it, but I want to know how they plan on doing it. Like, if it's going to be integrated with, like, the game, or if it's just going to be, like, kind of like what Ubisoft was trying to do with, like, just the pop-up ads. I don't know if that's the solution to getting people to buy more things. I don't know. It's kind of untreaded water for the most part, because every time somebody talks about doing that kind of stuff, it always kind of gets pulled back because players don't want that a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, shit, back when Capcom was trying to figure out what to do with Street Fighter V, like, one of the rumors was that it was going to go free to play, and it had just, like, sponsorships. Kind of like any kind of, like, sporting event, just have sponsors plastered fucking everywhere, or, like, you would have to, like, watch a commercial or something. Didn't happen, but that was a conversation at the time. I don't know. What do you think?
I think I don't want an ad for Master Chief killing aliens when I'm playing Hellblade. So don't do it. I want to play my game to relax, not to be hit with ads, but I already have that on my TV. Oh, fuck, man. Like, I'm really against it. Mobile games, I expect it. I don't want it in my, like, my other, like, console games. I mean, obviously, if there's crossovers and stuff, yeah, put the pop-up that there's a special limited thing, you know? But I don't want that, you know, I don't want an ad for, like, you know, buying, you know, groceries when I'm, you know, killing people as Bayek or whatever, you know? I don't know. That's just me. I'm against it.
And I want to kind of go back to the one blurb that you were talking about before, where the people at Microsoft were saying that it's all Microsoft gaming instead, there's no longer Xbox. It's kind of interesting because there was like an interview like a year or 2 years ago, where they kind of had that same sentiment. So this isn't really a new kind of perspective on like what Xbox is doing. Like I said, it remains to be seen what they decide to do because, yeah, right now Microsoft's telling Xbox, hey, you need to shrink down a little bit. It's like I know we just bought like Activision Blizzard and whatnot, but you need to shut some of that shit down or whatever. But I don't know. It just remains to be seen because we were talking about before when we were talking about Hellblade 2, Xbox needs to find their groove. And hopefully this is the year they finally find their groove. Whether or not it's
Hope so.
more so the meddling of Microsoft, that's yet to be seen. I feel like once we hit the fall time and Indiana Jones come out, we might get a clearer picture of what the future of Xbox is going to be, but that's, yet to be seen.
Before we jump into one of the big ones, I just want to jump back to Destiny 2 again. So they teased finally, I'm excited about this, a heavy trace rifle. So a big laser in the weapon
Baby.
slot. It's going to do big damage to shields. It's called Microcosm. It looks really cool, looks huge. In the video, it shows them melting an ogre. I'm just curious as to what makes it like a pick over other things, you know? Usually it's like utility or damage, so I'm really curious about that.
I hope it just has, I just hope it sounds cool.
Oh
You
yeah.
know?
They're usually their sound design's on fucking point, so
That's the hope because you want like any kind of shooter game, you want your cool exotic guns to like have a nice oomph to them. And I feel like since this is gonna be the first like heavy trace rifle, this needs to be like a beast of a laser cannon.
I'm wondering if it's tied behind the raid, but we'll see. Time will tell. Probably. It looks cool. That's a cool effect. I'm guessing it's a raid exotic. That's my guess right now. They tease the return of the Kostov, a gun that you could actually change into different ways. In the first game, you can make it like pulse, scout, auto. It was really cool. And now what it
Oh, I
is
think I
every
remember that.
seventh bullet ricochets, which I think is interesting. It's kind of like for those who play Baldur's Gate, the arrow that could ricochet off targets. So now we're gonna have a bullet that does that. I'm hoping the seventh bullet is strong, but also, yeah, I mean, if it's it makes sense if it's an auto rifle that the seventh bullet would do that, but time will tell. Looks cool, you know, it's a good old Kostov.
It'll be
Cool to
cool
see return.
if the more the bullet ricochets, the stronger it gets.
I would really enjoy that.
The
It'd be
chaos
great
that
for
can
like
ensue.
ad clear people. Yeah. And with anti-barrier, ooh, it'll shoot through people. But we'll see if it has anti-barrier when it comes out. And so the
Ben,
armor.
I was gonna
Go
say,
ahead, go
Ben
ahead.
in the chat says, I highly doubt that showed the raid exotic already.
We'll see. Probably right. That's just my theory. Hazardous propulsion, Titan armor. Really cool. So when you
Hey.
use your Titan class ability, it's gonna fire some missiles. And it can lock on to targets.
Oh, baby.
That's yes. Some Gundam shit I was talking about with Ben. Yeah, that's some Gundam shit. I don't know if they lock on, but it's just cool. Barricade, boom, missiles. Dodge, missiles. That's going to be hella fun. Cool idea. Whoever thought of that, good shit. That's going to be hella fun.
So I wonder...
That's right.
I wonder with the new subclass, I wonder if the missiles will take on any of the typing... Or if that factors in at all. I know, like, sometimes depending on, like...
Strand missiles, or like, if they're void missiles, they'll suppress or whatever. Or if they're...
Does this say anywhere, like, if it... Like, this is the type of armor piece that's just, like, it has its own deal. It's not something that kind of influences, but it doesn't have a strength depending on your subclass. So I wonder if... How, like, certain abilities can get, like, a little extra addition depending on your subclass. I wonder if, like, these missiles can also kind of, like, maybe take on the trait of whatever your subclass is.
Maybe. Sometimes they do that, like, later on, too. Like, if this, like, becomes an exotic that isn't that good and people forget about it, they sometimes buff it up with things like that. So, who knows what they have in mind for it. It might be too strong. Shit.
Jameson in the chat says, I'll return to D2 if the heavy trace rifle sounds like a Kamehameha. Dude. I throw on all of my Dragon Ball emotes and I'll just keep doing that.
I'm sure someone's going to do a bunch of videos like that. The Hunter one, there's arc explosives coming through your super, I think, when you launch or your attacks. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of like a Storm Chance, I believe. So you like call in your landfall, like boom, there's like explosives you send out. So that can be a good like AoE clear, add clear. The Warlock one though, I feel like gets a little shafted. If you hit your target with three like little strand attacks, it gets suspended. That's cool. So I'm spending my melee to suspend a few targets.
So you're spending your melee to do what almost any other strand thing can do.
Yeah, so if I really want to suspend, I guess I can do it with my grenade, do it with my melee, do it with my super. I guess that'll be good synergy with the bow, but yeah, it's not looking hot.
Yeah, it's so, not really enticing.
Not drawing me in. Yeah.
I feel like wizards get shafted a lot, but then again.
Yeah. But there is something called the Still Hunt. Basically, there's a sniper rifle that's going to be a golden gun. So they've been doing some things where they're kind of crossing over abilities. It looks really cool, too. It's a sniper rifle. It has, like, two parts, a little bayonet. But, yeah, you could have your own golden gun now and a weapon. I wonder if that's a dungeon or raid one. That sounds pretty powerful. But time will tell. We'll see. It's probably at the end of the campaign, I'm imagining. It's like, we can't use your light, but you could use it in this gun. Something like that, I imagine.
Channel all of your power into this shot.
I was joking, you know, with a couple people like, oh, look, it's no Galaxy Beyond, not no Land Beyond. But we'll probably never get that one back just because point and click with the snipers. Wait, that's it for Destiny. Really quick. So Gigabash, Brian, you shared this. They're getting a Nemesis 2 Kaiju pack. So Hedorah and Ghidorah are coming to the scene. And it looks a lot of fun. I just watched it earlier today. It's like, damn, it's cool. And they... Ghidorah, poisoning everything. Of course, Ghidorah doing its electric beam shit. So, Gigabash was a lot of fun. We played that pack. So, I'm glad they're getting more licensing to this shit. It's great.
Especially when they told us how hard it was to try to get Toho to let them use Godzilla monsters and stuff like that. So, it's cool that, you know, their first go around proved that they can, you know, deliver on what they promised and they're getting more. So, let's add more kaiju to this bitch. Ah, man. Good for them.
Yeah. When we get in Jet Jaguar and Geras.
Oh, never. Dude. That has to be.
They have a Jet Jaguar already, pretty much. But Brian, did you want to talk about the Marvel Rivals terms of service? The non-disparagement clause?
Sure. I think we'll do that and then we can kind of dive into
the big one,
Assassin's Creed. So About a week ago or so, Marvel Rivals had a closed alpha. Unfortunately, we couldn't get into it, so I went ahead and just kind of watched other people's coverage of it. And the game looks interesting. It looks fun. Like I said, it was a closed alpha, so it still has it has a lot of things that it still needs to work on. But as far as like the game itself, it looks fun. The characters look interesting to play. Some of them look broken as fuck. I'm looking at Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange.
Bro, I saw this guy open, sling ring a portal open in front of this, chasm, this is the right? Enemy base. And then in front of, the enemy spawn and, just kept falling off. Yeah. that's dirty. But the biggest news coming out of this closed alpha is that players started to notice that the kind of signed agreement had some wording that went along the lines of saying, if you want to play this game, you can't talk badly about our game or have any criticism at all, which I don't know if any of you have taken a journalism class, but that is a big no-no. That is called buying your review for the most part. That kind of brought to light, and then NetEase was kind of like, oh, that's not what we meant. We're going to go back and change it. It's like, sorry for the confusion. It's like, okay. That's pretty much the story. It's just kind of like, come on. You didn't expect anyone to notice? I'll give them the benefit of a doubt, because they haven't really... I'm not too familiar with what NetEase has done. I know they've done a lot of other games, but I think Marvel Rivals is their first big IP kind of game. It's Marvel. How can you can't get much bigger than Marvel. So a lot of eyes are on them right now. As far as I could tell, it hasn't really damaged what at least the people that played the game think about the game. People still had a fun time. It looks interesting. But yeah, that's just so weird, right?
For more reasons than one. I'm just looking right now what NetEase has done. So, Knives Out, Life After, Once Human, Identity 5, Bloodstrike, Harry Potter, Magic Something, Dead by Daylight. Lord of the Rings.
Wait, they did Dead by Daylight? Oh, that's right. They do Dead by Daylight. That's a game that their players love to hate and hate to love.
Mm-hmm. It's like Destiny 2. I hate this game. See you tomorrow.
I think more so. Because at least at some point, Destiny players kind of get what they want. In a sense. I don't know. They do have Nick Cage, though.
Yes. So who really won?
who really won? Paid. With that being said, Joel, should we dive into the big topic of tonight?
I think it's time. Or do you want to talk about X-Men 97 after still, or the finale happened? Do you want to save that, or do you want to just knock it out now?
I feel like we'll save it for next time, because I feel like we need to do it more justice than just kind of a quick talk through. I feel like we need to really dive into because it was a big finale, man, and
yes,
it deserves a full podcast about it.
Hell yeah, I'm down for this. Okay,
we'll do that next time. So yeah, last week, Assassin's Creed Shadows was officially revealed. We got a full trailer, kind of giving us the taste of what we could be expecting. And of course, there has been some internet scuttlebutt.
It's ridiculous, bro. Let's the just, lengths people have gone.
Yeah. So let's just talk about the game itself for a minute. Trailer looks really cool. There,
it does. So clean.
It's a cinematic trailer, so there's no gameplay yet. But the flavoring of what Assassin's Creed Shadows looks like it's going to be, it looks really sick. It's going to be obviously based in feudal Japan. I believe the Azu... I'm going to butcher this name. I'm sorry, people. This is the Azuchi Momoyama period, kind of like the late 1500s. And it's going to be another two protagonist game. I think the last time we had like double protagonist was Syndicate. So we have
Evie and Jacob,
yeah. So we kind of have one ninja and one samurai character. We have I believe her name is pronounced Naoe. A female assassin that you'll be able to play, and then also this samurai character who is going to be Yasuke. For people who don't know, Yasuke is a actual historical figure. He is a black samurai, and if you know what the Scuttlebutt's about. Oh, nice. For people that can only listen to Joel.
In 2019 or something. Reading about Yasuke's story.
Got the books. But yeah. And of course, just by saying that, you can probably guess what the Scuttlebutt online is about. It's kind of hard not to talk about it when you want to talk about Assassin's Creed Shadows. I feel like it needs to be talked about in a sense, because I feel like there's a lot of people that are just kind of, one, using this as a moment to kind of rage bait and stuff like that. Oh, so,
yeah. So many people. And people are like, yeah. Keep going, though.
Well, I was going to say, it's like, I feel like there needs to be an actual, like, level-headed conversation about this whole thing. So obviously, if you haven't been on the internet, one, congratulations, you saved yourself a lot of headache. But you know, whenever a property makes a new installment and there's, you know, a character that is of the African American or, you know, black persuasion, there is a vocal minority of the internet that will, you know, scream, oh, this is, you know, this is to cater to, you know,
they're pandering.
They're pandering. And it's like, bruh, this is this is actually like accurate to, or as accurate as we know, because I know Yasuke, there's only a limited amount of information we know about him, but for what we do know, it's like, this is accurate to like what the setting is going to be. And then of course you add in the sprinkling of fiction that Assassin's Creed gives to a historical, you know, timepiece.
Also, I want to continue off that. People, I have experienced this firsthand. Hey. I posted a video about the Minotaur fight in Odyssey. There's no fucking Minotaur, of course, in real world, right? But someone's like, remember when Assassin's Creed was historically accurate? Bro, I don't remember some Italian guy fighting the Pope and Shadow Popes, okay? Calm down now with the historical accuracy. With the Apple of Eden stuff, like, it's just ridiculous. People just come up with, like, the most dumb bullshit to be like, this, you know, just...
No, oh, yeah. So, like, I can't understand, but I can see the hoops that some certain people are trying to go through, because one of the first arguments was like, why didn't they have a male Japanese character? Why didn't they have a Japanese character? It's like, okay, well, one, she's right there. You won.
Which people are saying, like, she's the greatest assassin ever because people aren't paying attention. So it's like, boom. She's well, the that's best, the thing. Living in the shadows.
Well, that's the thing, because it's just like, okay, well, you do realize that there are, you know, women ninjas in that time period.
Impossible.
And there's also Yasuke in that same time period. Now, of course, the story is going to have the Assassin's Creed flavoring, so it's not going to be lining up with all the information that we know. Because, hey, we need to add in the weird fucking first civilization bullshit that every game needs to have. I'm not complaining because I love that stupid shit. But it's just, it's, I feel my brain, you'll probably understand this, Joel. I feel my brain melting just slightly more the more I see like the TikToks and like the posts of people arguing back and forth about, like, come, it's like, dude, it's so easy to tell somebody is doing something out of bad faith just by the lack of information that they can actually muster to make an argument for this whole thing. Like, right now, like, the first big argument was like, this isn't historically accurate. And it's like, oh, yes, it is. It's like, well, he wasn't a real samurai. He was a retainer. It's like, retainers were mostly samurai back in that time period in Japan. So I don't know what the fuck you're complaining about. Oh, wait, maybe it's because he's just fucking
black.
Just
say the quiet part out loud, motherfucker. Just say the quiet part out loud.
So,
come on.
So can I, it's like, I know you're like, it's hard because I want to be able to look at people who make the argument and be like, okay, I understand that the whole fan base has been waiting such a long time for a, you know, Japanese, like, or Japan-based Assassin's Creed game. Fair. I can understand waiting that long. People have an idea of what the game would be in their head. Fair. But when the game is announced and it shows off what the flavor of the gameplay or, you know, the idea of what the game is going to be, maybe you should look at what is happening. If you want to have a sound argument, maybe you should fucking, I don't know, read a book or something, or look at history, or maybe, I don't know, maybe look at sort of somebody that knows a little bit about fucking ancient Japanese history. I'm getting heated up.
Just make it up. Fuck that. Nah.
Because,
You know what I saw recently, Brian? I just kind of agree. Like, we've seen this a lot, right? And lots of fandoms, never goes away. I just agree with what someone said recently. It's like, you just can't use logic with these people. They're not using logic. You shouldn't either. So, whatever. Like, you just come up with some bullshit.
Like,
that's what it is, honestly.
It's,
like,
it's explanations people base. Like, but like, we had a game where in the DLC, Washington became King of America.
That's okay.
We had, you know, we fought cursed pharaohs in like,
and Anubis, a fucking giant Anubis.
You know, we've seen Greek gods, we've seen Norse gods. You know, it's such a, what makes me like the most frustrated about this, besides like the ignorance of a lot of people, is that the conversation should be about what we expect from this game or what we like to see from this game, instead of having the circular conversation that repeats itself over and over again in many different fandoms and many different situations that ends up leading nowhere. Except for, you know, once people are just yelling at each other over some bullshit that shouldn't be a problem, but for some people it is a problem for some reason.
You know what it is. We know what it is. You know.
You know what it is. I don't know. I mean, these people are going to be here, I think, probably one of the healthiest things to do is just inform people about, like, hey, you want to learn about the history of, like, late 1500s Japan? Like, you could look this up, or, like, I'll tell you about this, you know? So I appreciate the people that are using this as an opportunity to educate people about Japanese history. Because at the end of the day, that's what kind of Assassin's Creed is always really good at, is that they introduce people to a certain point of history, and then it kind of lets people kind of discover and, like, go out and look for more, like, actual pieces of, like, that history. Like, because, like, shit, we didn't know much about, or at least I didn't know much about the Italian Renaissance period until I play Assassin's Creed, and I looked more shit up, and it's like, oh, this is actually kind of sick. Or, like, name any other, like, Assassin's Creed game that, like, puts you in a period of time. And even, like, the most recent games that they actually give you the educational mode where you can actually just go travel throughout the entire map and actually have these little blurbs that pop up telling you about the history of, like, the locations you're going through that are cool. And I'm assuming we're going to get that same exact thing for Shadows. But with that being said, I actually want to talk about some stuff that Ubisoft kind of released about what we could look forward to the game itself. So like we said before, two protagonists. We have Yasuke and we have Naoe, I believe. It's N-A-O-E. Sorry if I'm pronouncing it wrong. I'll probably learn by the time this game comes out. But Naoe, we'll have two completely different game styles, which I think is great. Because I like Syndicate. I think Syndicate's an underrated game for... It just got kind of overshadowed by the shit show that Unity was. And I like that they had the two characters, but I felt like besides, like, a few things from, like, the skill tree, like, Eevee and Jacob kind of felt the same. So it's cool that we're getting two separate, like, Naoe's going to be the ninja, like, traditional assassin, where you'd be stealthy and sneaky and, like, try to, like, sneak into places, where Yasuke is just going to be the big brute that is going to have the more combat heavy game style. I'm looking up a IGN article listing out a few details about the game. It says servants are a new type of NPC ranking between civilians and enemies. While they cannot fight, they are able to call in reinforcements and raise alarms. They have their own patrol routes and carry lanterns at night. And it kind of goes on saying how, like, the NPCs are going to have a more natural, not like natural feel, but they're going to be more unique depending on what kind of person they are, which I think is interesting. It kind of creates more variety in, like, your stealthing or your combat.
And just assume everyone's got your back.
Right. There's now an option to knock foes out when performing stealth takedowns, allowing for a pacifist playthrough. That's kind of cool. Like, you have to be a killer. Speaking of finally, you'll be able to crawl in a prone position now, so you'll be able to get low to the ground. Interesting. Of course, how would you be a ninja without your grappling hook? So there's actually going to be a grappling hook mechanic that's similar to... Well, actually, it says here, unlike the Syndicate zipline, the ropes are going to use actual physics.
Nice.
So that's fun. Eagle Vision returns. Oh, so that's the one thing. For people that haven't played the newer ones, they kind of replaced Eagle Vision with, like, you get like a bird, like an eagle or something. This one, they're actually going back. So they're actually going to have Eagle Vision, and there's not going to be the bird mechanic anymore. So in one way, I'm kind of glad, because after playing Mirage, I missed having the Eagle Vision. But also, you know, having a few games with having a little bird companion, you know, it's kind of sad to see it go. But I can understand, you know, having two main characters, it would be kind of weird to have two sets of birds or have one bird for both. It's just easier that way. Let's see. Combat RPG systems. Yeah, it says Yasuke is going to use his weapons to block incoming attacks and perform parries. Now he is able to engage in combat, but is unable to block and parry. Instead, she can deflect enemy blows. So it's actually going to be very different. Like, it's going to be catering to your playstyle. And I believe they said you'll be able, just like Syndicate, you'll be able to swap. There'll be like the missions where you could pick either or character, and there'll be like dedicated story missions for both of them.
Little so, Miles and Peter action, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much. Of course, you'll have era, you know, era accurate weapons like the katana and like the war clubs and stuff like that. Let's see. Oh, interesting. Each weapon has its own skill tree. Investing time into using a particular weapon will improve your proficiency with it. That's interesting.
I like that.
It makes me wonder if they're relying on like that more than having your character have a skill tree. And I wonder if it'll be locked to one thing. Cause I know, I remember in Syndicate, when you leveled up, you had abilities that were shared between both of them. And then when they weren't, you still had the same amount of XP that you could use for both characters. So I'm wondering if you'll be able to share experience between the both of them, or
in some ways, what? Probably.
Oh, I should have just read more. It says, Yasuke now will have individual skill trees and gear, but shared XP, collected weapons, and resources. That is great, because having separate resources, especially in a more RPG-like game, sucks ass. And I'm glad they they're not having a separate, because I... What was it? There was, I forget which Assassin's Creed, I think it might have been Origins, but when they started really relying on you collecting a bunch of resources to make gear, like, I remember that getting so tedious. So it's nice to be able to have some shared resources there. They're talking about how they're upgrading their Anvil engine, so it, you know, games look cooler and nicer. Apparently the world's gonna have seasons.
That's cool.
So like they'll go through like a season cycle, like spring, summer, autumn, and winter. So every location will have like a changing effect as far as, you know, the environment.
I'm sure all the photo mode people with those cherry blossoms are gonna go wild meeting me.
Oh, Joel, this is actually really sick. So it says, for example, in the spring and summer times when plants bloom and flower, there will be bushes and long grass to hide in. Later in autumn and winter, those plants will die and remove hiding spots. So it's actually going to affect the world. That's interesting. Water also freezes in winter.
I like that dynamic.
Yeah, I actually like that too. Seasons affect NPC behaviors as well. Enemy samurai cut through bushes in search of you. In the winter, foes stay close to fire in warm places, potentially opening up. So this goes back to like how NPCs are going to have unique reactions to their surroundings, and they're going to react with the world based on, you know, the environment. So that's sick. So this is just a few of the ideas of like what this game is going to be. And it sounds interesting. It sounds like this is, I believe this is actually the first only current gen, because I believe Mirage was the last one that was both on old consoles and current consoles. So this is going to be like the first Series X / PS5 Assassin's Creed game. So that's sick. I'm just sad that right now the conversation is based around some people like pushing baseless fucking racist claims and shit like that. You know?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about a not so fun part. Well, actually, a funny thing before that is I like how people are like, the Japanese are really upset. And like, there's tweets of saying, nah, man, it's cool. Or Yasuke's part of our culture. I just like don't speak
it,
for us.
It just goes to show that ignorant people will kind of out themselves.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
But I'm excited.
What I wanted to say was, all these, I'm really upset with games with when they do this. Uh-oh. Shit is a multiple editions of fucking games.
Oh, bro. Like, bro. Yeah, let's talk about it.
So we have the regular one. I'm looking at their website right now. So base game with the pre-order bonus, $70. I hope it's everything, right? Gold edition, base game, pre-order bonus, season pass, and 3 days early access. $109. $20 more, base game, pre-order bonus, season pass, three days early access, and ultimate pack. And there's an ultimate edition day one with, 100 plus PC games, including new releases, for $17.99 a month. Man, dude, I am...
Don't forget the collector's edition, Joel.
I know, I was
waiting. The $300 collector's edition.
You know, let me cut off a racist head. but
see,
yeah, I just,
what this is, and we're not even like mentioning the fact that they're, it's very obvious that that Ubisoft is really trying to, one, push their subscription service, and two, it's the constant conversation of how we're getting closer and closer to an all digital age, which makes the question, do we own our stuff? Because out of the different editions that you mentioned, the only ones that are coming with a physical version are the base one, the $109 version, and then the collector's edition. Like, the ultimate edition is only digital. And I actually believe if you go into Ubisoft's website, you can only pre-order through them digitally. They're not offering physical. You have to go to like a Best Buy or something to get a physical copy. So, I don't know. It's kind of cringy, because I know Ubisoft's not the only company that does this. There's still other companies that have. Wow. I mean, shit. Look at the past like few releases from Sega, and how they have the weird Sega structure. Like, they had the weird Sonic All-Star or Sonic Superstars. They had the weird like tier list of like, this is what you get with the original, this is what you get with the deluxe edition and whatnot. Or how the most recent Like a Dragon game had a new game plus tied to a certain edition that you had to get.
That's fucked. I didn't hear about that. Fuck
yeah.
That shit. Fuck yourself.
Yeah, it's not fun.
Yeah, I mean, this collector's edition is great. Statue, map, scroll, lithographs, you know, a katana, a suba that's life size, a cool steel book, you know, you know,
that's what makes me mad the most.
Right. It's like, it also be cool to sell it separate, not just limit it to like a fucking super expensive collector's edition. But
I've said this multiple times on this podcast. I am the steelbook guy. I love my steelbooks.
$1,500?
Up until recently, I've been able to get the steelbooks for Assassin's Creed like from my physical collection through just like the other, like maybe like the Ultimate Edition or like the Gold Edition. This year, like if I want to get the Steelbook, I have to shell out $300 for that and the game and some, like the statue looks nice. The statue would be sick. The other stuff I don't really care about. I'm not getting the $300 edition, but it's like, I understand digital is the future and eventually it's going to be the only option, but I don't know. I don't buy physical that often, but when I do, it's for games that I care about and I want to be able to have them forever or for as long as I'm allowed to play them, not run the risk of like just everything shutting down and not being able to ever use my investment ever again. So
nah, let's put all our eggs in one basket. What could go wrong?
Or you could just subscribe to the Ubisoft Plus subscription service.
Oh, speaking of subscribe, quick segue, the fucking return of cable bundled streaming services. Fuck that shit. Oh my God. It's like, why
it
was
bound
fucking
to happen.
Fuck. What's the fucking point of going to streaming then? To not pay writers, I guess. But
the only silver lining that I've heard about this whole that whole thing is that, well, at least you're paying for the things you know you want instead of paying for like three channels and then 100 channels you never fucking watch.
I guess that's fair, yeah.
Still, it's funny that the whole point of streaming was to get away from cable. Yeah, and now
back to cable.
And now there's rumors that, you know, Disney Plus and Hulu and like HBO Max and stuff is gonna make a bundle service. Like, fuck, man. The digital era is so simple and useful, but it's also stupid.
At least they'll never take my Shin Ultraman Blu-ray.
Ooh, look at that.
Hard copy, unopened, baby.
Did you just get that?
Oh, I've had it. I see it every day I wake up.
And you haven't watched it yet? I'm surprised.
The time will come and I will never stop watching. But yeah. Kamen Rider first. Need to get that one.
Oh yeah, for sure. So yeah, that's about it.
Dude.
You know, people just moral of the story for this episode. Be chill. Be kind. Don't go into bad faith arguments.
Let's spread misinformation. Let's do it.
Okay. We're going to pure chaos mode. Okay.
We're going to go 100% clout and chaos. And we're going to get so big. And people are like, remember when they were good? We're like, nah. You don't have facts about that. Nah. It's fucking 180. Fuck it. 100% heel mode. Let's go. Let's just.
Oh, well.
Yeah, you're right. Yasuke, nah.
There you have it, folks. This is your champion coming into this Friday. full.
Yeah, whatever. They needed three fucking people to dethrone me. What does that say? Cowards. Cowards. We need to do well to conquer.
Sounds like someone's not confident in their outcome.
Statement still stands.
All right. Well, that'll do it for this podcast today. We thank you guys so much for watching and listening to this, wherever you watch or listen to this. Of course, thank you for the people hanging out here live on twitch.tv. We will be here on Friday, 7 p.m. Pacific. Titles on the line. We're going to have a big Memorial Day weekend blowout. So be there. Have some fun with us. And remember, forever and always, keep on nerding.